under the tree cloud. That's a broken sun. Oh yes, I've been living a long time to be back beyond home. Cause I gave you my last hope for you. Don't hand it back to me, little blue. No, come on, little blue.
The pop star Cat Stevens became a Muslim 3 years ago, married his fiancée in the London mosque, and is now known as Yusuf Islam. Age 32, born in London of a Greek Cypriot father and a Swedish mother, he turned his back on his musical career, surrendered fame and money, and at present works, in his own words, only for Allah. Now that film excerpt, by courtesy of the BBC, that we've just been looking at, that was Cat Stevens. We're now looking at Yusuf Islam. Is there a difference, Yusuf?
Well, the difference, I would say, is gigantic. The transformation that Islam makes to a person.
You feel this internally?
I feel it absolutely, internally and externally also. But it's really, I could make an analogy for you if you like.
Please.
It's as if I was dead and I'm now alive. And it's that big a difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's also another way you could say it was as if I was the same person, but the room was in darkness. And when God decided, he switched on the light and I could see the universe around me with a real eye, instead of just being in darkness, as you say.
I suppose having a Greek Cypriot father and a Swedish mother, kind of a Greek Orthodox background, perhaps Protestant from your mother, you would be brought, and born in London, you'd be brought up as a Christian, to start with. The culture, the background would be Christian.
The family was really, it was a strong family. There was lots of love in the family,
yeah.
And I think that helps also.
Mm. With any religious background, would it have been Christian?
They sent me to the nearest school, which was in Dewey Lane, which was a Roman Catholic school, and they're run by nuns, and that was really where I learnt, I suppose, about God, heaven and hell, the angels, Jesus is beyond him.
Could you enlighten me and a few others, of course, about the basic principles of Islam?
Islam, the basic principle, is to believe in no God except God. That, in itself, is it sweeps the board. It purifies you of any superstitions or attachments to this world. It puts you in line with the reality, which is that there is only one God. And he is the creator of all the universe, all the planets, the stars, the suns, the moons, the heaven and the earth, and every form of life. And that he cannot be divided.
Mm-hmm.
This is the ultimate truth. La ilaha illallah, meaning there is no God but God. And this is all his kingdom. So this is about Islam. It purifies the thoughts of man. It takes him away from duality, multiplicity, problems, and it puts him into line with the true reality, which is that everything belongs to God and everything is returning to him.
But Christianity is monotheistic too, isn't it? And what in particular way is Islam? How do you demonstrate in your daily life the religion of Islam?
You demonstrate it in your attitude within and without. What you see outside is a Muslim perhaps praying five times a day. This immediate
demonstration.
This is a very strong demonstration. Mm. It's not left up to one day a week. You think that you need nourishment for your body. You have to eat several times a day in order to sustain your body. Well, And your soul also, isn't your soul more important than your body? Your soul needs nourishment. So five times a day, a Muslim prays and detaches himself from the world, turns his back on the world and faces God.
Are there set prayers or individual prayers that you can spontaneously make up?
You can pray anywhere, but the form is set in a way. There are certain movements, but the whole thing takes place really in your intention. Your intention begins the prayer, and then your prayer is also linked with the physical motion as well. Because the world is not just, the man is not just spirit, he's spirit and body. So you have to combine all things, like I was saying. Islam combines everything.
Are you happier now than you were?
Happier, ecstatically, really, but you can't say that I'm happy about the same things. I'm happy about the fact that God has led me to understanding so many things. For instance, what has Islam got over Christianity? I think you sort of mentioned something like that.
I asked you that.
Well, Islam, of course, is the final religion. It is, in fact, the religion of all the prophets. It means surrender. Every prophet that was ever sent was a Muslim, or one who submitted to God. So you must understand first what Muslim means. Also, the Quran teaches you really the character of Jesus in a better way, much better than I've ever understood him before.
Exactly.
And this is to say that Jesus was made without father. In other words, mother was pure. But God can do anything. God can just say be, and it is. This is the point where we totally believe that in Mary and her, we honor her.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes down to saying that Jesus is a God, or God, then we absolutely refute it, because he himself was only telling the Jews and the children of Israel to worship, to come back to the true religion, and the religion, in fact, of Abraham, which is a Muslim.
Well, that's semantics, I think, because, I mean, Abraham was 1800 BC, the Judaism pioneer. But why do you say it's the final religion? You have Abraham, you have the other Jewish prophets, you have Jesus, you have Muhammad, over a time scale of 2,000 years. Why should that be the final revelation? Why shouldn't there be more?
Why shouldn't there be more? Why does man keep on having to learn the lesson?
Well, he starts, unfortunately.
Until you come to Islam. And when you come to Islam, you learn that the message has been completed.
But then everybody has to learn that, Yusuf.
This is true.
Yeah. Islam a proselytizing religion then?
Islam is the belief in God. It's the fundamental belief that man was made to be his deputy on earth and to bring about his laws and commands on earth. Man is the dividing between the physical world and the spiritual world, if you like. He has foresight into the unseen. But we don't all have foresight. We have to follow the chosen ones whom God has chosen to lead us. Moses.
Certainly.
Was delivering the message from the unseen. He was bringing a brand of warmth for the people that they may follow. Jesus, again, peace be on him, was bringing the message to the people. Now, there's always people who will disbelieve. Every prophet has had a difficult time. There's never been an easy time for any prophet. And of course, with Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, peace be on him, he had one of the most difficult times, because if you think where he was brought up in Mecca, they were worshipping 360 idols in that place which Abraham had built.
Can I ask you, don't you miss any of the old life? I mean, the travel, the excitement, the money?
Not really. It was very sort of unfulfilling, you know, even though there was attractions to it, they were all very shallow.
That's the interesting thing, Yusuf, because many people are, you know, watching us now, will feel that they themselves are dissatisfied, or they have lots of problems. That if only we could win the pools, then most of those problems would be solved. But you, with your royalties, you were very rich, you won the pools, didn't you, in a sense, and you still have problems.
This is it. There's no relief in this world. If you're searching for relief in this world, then most definitely you'll get none. Finally, the cure for this life is death. Everything has a cure. Everything has a cure. Really, God has created diseases and their cures. But the cure for life, this world, is death. You have to pass through death. Now, what you do while you're here, this is the test. Because you're given a body. Everybody is given a body and a soul. Now, people spend too much time on the body and not enough time on the soul. Because the soul will go on forever, whereas the body only has so long. It's a matter of commerce, if you really think about it. You're a fool if you don't analyze the situation and look up to the truth and say, yes, I am but a human being, but I've been given something which I can work with, and that is the soul.
When your body had this very serious illness happen to it, I think it was 1968, was this the time when you started to think?
Actually, yeah, I just had a dose of success, if you like, with a thing called Matthew and Son,
yes.
And a few songs. I became quite famous very quickly.
Mm.
And immediately I was worked into the ground. This was the system, the mechanism, you know, of the star machine. You started doing tours, and I used to drink at that time. I was about 19. I used to drink a bottle of brandy a night to go on stage, to find enough courage to go on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how I worked myself into the ground. And finally my body gave up.
Mm.
And I got TB, and I had to go to hospital for 3 months and convalesce for a whole year.
And you covered the hospital mirrors with paper, I've read somewhere. Why was that?
Well, this was the time when I'd been given the opportunity to stop this activity, this senseless activity, you know, which kept on going. Mm. I put a stop to it and started to think about my existence.
You hated yourself? Out the outside world.
I never really hated myself, but I was trying to find out who I was.
Mm.
I was not just I was coming through a dark period.
Mm.
And I was being led, and in fact I had a book with me then called The Secret Path, and it was the first time I had read anything which dealt with death face on, and I was so happy because I'd always been frightened of death and not wondering what. We're not being able to see through it.
On any other occasion, have you been in danger of death? You recovered from the hospital.
Well, I was at that time. It was very serious to me. I thought everybody was having me on and said, actually, I was dying, but they were telling me, oh, you're going to be all right. And this is the kind of thing your mind plays with. But there was a time when I came close to death. I remember I was swimming and Los Angeles. There was a friend's house on the beach, a very rich people, you know, and I thought it looks good. So I went for a little dip. And as I got out there, it was quite cold. I thought, this is enough for me. I'll start coming back. So then I found myself in this terrible current. There was no way I could ever get back there.
Mm.
And I was becoming very, very tired. So I was now faced with this question, death.
Mm.
This might be my time.
Mm.
So I prayed to God. I said, God, if you save me from this, I'll give myself to you. And at that precise moment, a wave from somewhere came and lifted me up and pushed me, and I started swimming.
Extraordinary.
This is, you know, it's a simple story, but...
Did you keep your bargain with God?
Now, this is it. We forget our bargains. When we're in trouble, we turn to God. When we're in fine health, We don't. We forget.
It's a bit to be conquered earlier.
But God doesn't forget. And he showed me the way to fulfill my debt.
Mm-hmm.
And Islam is the way.
There are discrepancies, aren't there, between what is in the Quran and what subsequent Ottoman Empire decree has made. Like the veil, I understand, is not in the Quran. The need to wear the veil.
Actually, no. The Quran, you know, again, some people have not read the Quran properly, but the Quran does say, it tells, first of all, the men, and this is the first thing, to lower their gaze. Now, the eyelid is, in fact, a veil for the man. He is not to look with desire at a lady or a woman. In fact, Jesus himself said, if you look with desire at a lady...
Yeah, but what about the veil? Where does that come into the court?
The veil then follows. It says, and to the women to be modest and to cover their adornment. Because God has made women more beautiful. Obviously, this is a fact of nature. This is the way he's created us. He's made women beautiful. And he's given one of the most beautiful things to women is the hair. And it says in the Quran, cover your adornment except that which is necessary. And in fact, a woman has reminded me that in order to be a person in Islam, you're not made, if you're a woman, you're put up like a doll, you know, given ears and a little bunny tail, or to, so, used for men to just gaze and gawk at. No. A woman is accepted for being a person. You're looking at her as a face, as a person, and her deeds. You're not necessarily looking at her as an object of desire. So it brings women right up to the proper level, which is as a human being and responsible for their deeds.
But there's an anomaly in the wearing of the veil, isn't there? I mean, the Syrian middle-aged women have got rid of the veil, and their daughters are taking it up again.
Alhamdulillah, meaning, praise be to God, he is showing the people the right way.
I was wondering what the effect on your father was, who, after all, as a Greek Cypriot, his mortal enemy would be the Turk, the Ottoman Empire, the Muslim Empire. What did he think about you becoming a Muslim?
Well, this is really a fantasy, a fiction, something which is made up, I must say, by the powers, the bigger powers trying to divide the smaller people. Because my father came from an island, Cyprus, where the Turks and the Greeks actually, although they had different backgrounds, were brothers. And of course the influence on each other was gigantic. And of course Cyprus is very close to Palestine, Turkey and Egypt. And in fact my father grew up in Egypt. So Islam was nothing new to him. In fact I used to remember him saying sometimes, Assalamu alaikum, which is the greetings of the Muslim, which is peace be with you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't exactly know what he was saying. And so he believed in God.
But he was Greek Orthodox?
Greek Orthodox. Mm-hmm. Yeah, born into the religion of...
So it was no shock to him that you were a Muslim?
That I became a Muslim? Mm-hmm. No. In fact, maybe a little bit of a shock in the beginning, but it was so natural. He knew that it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me.
And
I have an example of that, because he died in 1978. And on his deathbed was the time when he first called me Yusuf. Now you can imagine he was an old man, 78.
Yes, yes, yes.
He was in fact 78.
Yes.
But this was all his life. He had called me something else. You know, all my life he called me something else. At this point, he was in the real state because he knew, obviously, that the time was coming. He called me Yusuf. And when my mother said, when he asked, where is Yusuf? And she said, he's at the mosque. He was happy. He gave my mother a smile. And this is something which is a guidance for me because I was accepted by my father. He accepted me as Yusuf.
They're very important to you, I think. There are many sacrifices or hardships that you have to undergo as a Muslim, the month of Ramadan. And what is the particular hardship in that for you?
Well, for Muslims in general, they have to do without food and partaking of anything. If they smoke, they're not really supposed to smoke. But if they smoke, they give up smoking as well. And
of course, they don't drink alcohol, do they? At any time.
No. Muslim shouldn't drink alcohol.
Mm.
So we give up all for eating, and we maintain this fast from the morning to the sunset, from dawn to sunset. Mm. The hardship is really in being able to remember why you're doing it. Because you can do it, and do it very simply. It's not difficult, because I'm sure you know, as a busy man, sometimes you're so busy you forget to eat, and it's no hardship. But when you do it on purpose, you have to now keep on checking your intention. You are doing it. Why? Because you know that God sees you. If you go around the corner and have a sandwich by yourself, nobody knows. Of course, God knows. This is a way of developing the consciousness to God, the seeing, the one who sees. So it's a matter of being aware.
You speak with that certainty, Yusuf. Don't you ever have doubts?
No, from the moment I started reading the Quran, the doubts were washed away. All the questions that you could ever ask are there. It's the book which is until the end of time for man's guidance. Science has never contradicted what the Quran has said. Mm-hmm. And in reality, when you come through all the other channels, you'll find the Word of God perfected and preserved in the Quran.
What for you is the greatest sin?
The greatest sin, as all Muslims know, is to worship anything other than God. To associate, in other words, any partner with Him. That is to fear. That is to fear that there might be some other power. All right, but say you have, for instance, I had in the beginning a few superstitions. You know, let me see if I can remember them.
The ladder.
A ladder, yeah, ladder, black cat, 13, traveling on 13. All these kind of things. You must realize that there is no power to do you harm. Any power, unless God has written it for you.
So you have no fear then of anything?
Only unless I'm undutiful to God, in which case I have fear that He might punish me for forgetting His might, His power, mm-hmm. His perfection, His reality. If you forget, you are the one who loses.
You have a great musical talent, which is not being used now. Don't you miss, or do you feel that you'll never come back to music again?
I'm not missing anything really, because the Quran is in one way also like the most masterful musical piece. Everything is timed, and its measure is complete. It has meaning. It has meaning, eternal meaning, truth. Everything combined, I could never. You see, when I wrote songs, I used to write because I felt people weren't saying these things. I had to come and talk about this because people weren't saying that. I had to talk about children, remind them about this and that. But finally, when I read the Quran, I realized it had already been written.
Can we actually have one of your songs, one of your own compositions, on the road to find out? Is this number particularly relevant to you?
I think it is. It's relevant to the seeker, because we all have the seeker in us. Mm. And I wrote that song knowing in my heart that there is something above, constantly above, which I'm searching for, but I didn't know what. And you'll find many verses in there talking about leaving home and going out on the search and listening to some and not listening to others, but finally believing in the direction, on the road to find out. And the last verse is the most important, significant, because in fact it was like a miniature prophecy where I said, pick up a good book. And I made sure I said a good book and not the good book, in case some people thought it might be the Bible. At that time even I was prepared, and I knew that the book is the thing which raises man, the Word. And the Word is with God. That the Word is in the Quran, complete.